Hello, everyone, and thanks for checking out the Rural Perspectives podcast. I'm Adam Albrick with Ag Country Farm Credit Services, and I'm excited today to talk all about our country's national mammal. That's right, the national mammal of the United States, which is none other than the bison. Here to tell us everything we need to know about the animal and the industry is Kevin Lear, who serves as the executive director of the North Dakota Buffalo Association and co-owner and operator of Heartland Bison Ranch, which is where we're broadcasting from. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
What's the proper term for this animal? Is it bison? Or as the North Dakota state folks like to say, bison, almost with a Z instead of an S?
That's right.
Or is it buffalo?
Yeah, if you're an NDSU fan, it's bison, right? No, it's really interchangeable throughout the industry, and I think it's been one of those things that's been stuck that way for a long time. The proper term is bison, and you know, you'll see it interchangeable. We're Heartland Bison Ranch. I'm the executive director of North Dakota Buffalo Association, so there's a perfect example for you right there. But typically when I tell people it's bison, that's the way to go.
Now, as we've mentioned, we're in the great state of North Dakota. Could you give us a little overview of what the industry is like here?
Yeah, so I would say we're in a rebuilding mode right now. North Dakota, back in the late 1990s, was the number one producing state in terms of bison population on domestic herds. And then we went through kind of, you know, a pretty big correction in our market. And a lot of producers in North Dakota started getting out of bison because the economics wasn't there anymore. And they needed to shift to something that was agriculture that was going to work for them. And, you know, right at that time, you started to see the shift in commodity prices coming back. Cattle was coming back. And so we lost a lot of producers. And, you know, consequently, we lost a lot of our herd, if you want to put it that way. And then, you know, South Dakota, they kind of have the topography, they have the rangeland, and they're kind of prime bison country down there. There's not a whole lot you can do with that rugged country other than graze it. So they stuck with it, they kept building it, and now, yeah, so we're trailing a little bit, but hopefully we're coming back.
What does the average herd size look like in this state?
It kind of varies, kind of depending on where you're at. I would say for the most part, you're going to see quite a few of our ranchers right around that 60 to 80 bison cows. There are some producers down in the southwest part of the corner, not too far from South Dakota, that are up like maybe 1,000 to 3,000 head. And then you're going to see kind of in our area towards New Rockford, you have a few more producers who are maybe in that 2 to 500 head. So it kind of varies by area of the state, but we don't have quite as many of those smaller producers, we say. And that's where we're hoping we can try to make some ground up with our growing the herd.
Now, there's different types of operations. Could you just explain a little bit about how that works and the different types that there, in fact, are within this diverse industry?
Yeah, so it depends on kind of how you approach it. You'll have some people who will get into bison because they found that in their local area, there's a niche market for the product, so they want to vertically integrate. So we call those, you know, hoof to plate. You know, they're going to grow that animal. They're going to maybe name it. I don't know. You know, but they're a small operation, usually family run, and they're growing and marketing their own product all the way to the end, which is a great opportunity for them. And then you have some guys who are just cow-calf operation where, you know, they got the land and they got the animals for a cow herd to be able to set that up. And they're taking those calves off those bison cows in the, you know, the fall or winter months. And then those are getting marketed to whether it's a feedlot operation to finish them off that way, or maybe a grass-fed operation where they're going to run, you know, on a grass finishing program, or breeding stock, you know, that can happen too. And then you have maybe guys who are on the finishing side. And so whether they're a grass finisher or a grain finisher, they're buying those calves and they're marketing it. So, you know, it kind of depends on what your structure of your ranch and your operation for the economics works for you. But those are kind of the three main areas that we're seeing.
Now, this next question is going to play right into your other profession, which, of course, is teaching and history teaching.
Yeah.
The bison is a very iconic animal. It's even found on the standard North Dakota license plate. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about the historical significance of this animal and even to this area?
Yeah, so, I mean, from where we're sitting right now, we're actually in an area that our state archaeologist has come out multiple times to our ranch, and they've done basically like site digs. And what they found just by going through, you know, different like molehills and gopher hills and stuff like that, they're finding fragments of bison bone, of pottery, of arrowheads, that kind of stuff, which has been really neat. Because then what we've been able to determine, and based on the evidence left behind, is that our area specifically right here was actually a Native American processing camp. So after the hunt, this is where they were. And it makes sense because the way the archaeologist was laying it out to us was we have these natural springs that have been flowing for, you know, as long as we can remember, I guess. But those natural springs obviously were a draw for Native Americans to have that water source, and then to be able to process their animals into what would become, you know, their lifeblood of their community. So that's really cool locally, you know, tied to the history of it. But then I think when you look at a broader picture and you look at what the bison meant to the Native American culture, what it meant to the West, and this idea, this romantic idea of, you know, taming the Wild West. And obviously there's some good and there's some bad there in that story on the bison hunters coming out and killing off a majority of the population. But I always think it's kind of amazing to think when I go out and look at our own herd, and then I think about reading, you know, historical manuscripts or journal articles about bison herds as far as the eye can see, and it would take a half day for a whole herd just to move in front of you, which is just an amazing thing to try to put that in perspective when you see, you know, a herd of 200 and let alone 200,000. And I think on top of that, what we're really starting to understand and appreciate with the bison is how big of a part they had in the ecosystem in creating the native rangelands of the West. And when, you know, if you're looking at Alan Savory, you know, or any of these people who are really big into holistic management, and you're starting to see that really that tool that makes the whole circle come full circle is the bison. And we're bringing that back. And now it's almost like we're ranching for profit. We're ranching for an opportunity in ag. And now we're ranching with our national mammal, which is newly crowned, right? And in this process that is really helping, you know, sustainable agriculture move forward. So I don't know. It's a pretty cool story.
What does it mean to you as a bison rancher to have a state that embraces the animal like North Dakota does?
Yeah, it's really neat. And the state, I think, collectively, you know, with the Teddy Roosevelt National Park, there's the native herd there, and people just love it. And then it's always interesting because you have people who will ask you, like, oh, you raise bison? Oh, that's awesome. You know, or then we'll do, like, cool little things. Like, I have a flagpole up in one of our pastures, and, you know, for fun, like on bison game day for NDSU, you know, we'll fly a bison NDSU flag and we'll say, hey, Heartland Bison supports NDSU, you know, and like then there becomes like this idea of like all things bison. And it's really like in the last 5 years almost, like it's becoming a really branded thing where you see a lot of people who wear shirts with a bison logo on it or something, or, you know, home with a bison in the middle. And it's really neat. I think it's becoming something that more and more people can find commonality with. And they're really proud of the animal itself, and it's pretty awesome to be able to raise it.
If there's any college football fans out there, obviously NDSU is a powerhouse, but ESPN's College Game Day has even come to Fargo a couple of years in a row, and a bison calf has been brought out on live TV. Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah, they named him Corso. I mean, it was an unbelievable deal. Yeah, and I mean, You're kind of either in one area or the other. You're either a Fighting Hawks fan or a NDSU Bison fan. And I think, you know, by association to the herd, we're kind of Bison fans.
You actually brought up a little bit ago, but the Bison was near extinction by the times of the early 1900s, but has been a focus of preservation and recovery since, with places like national parks and state parks. But farmers and ranchers are also helping aid that effort. Earlier this year, the National Bison Association launched the Bison 1 Million campaign. For those unaware of this campaign, could you tell the listeners about this effort?
Yeah, so it was actually new to me. I didn't have a chance to get out to the international conference, and I kind of regret not being able to get out there. But when I saw it launched and I started reading into it, it's a really ambitious goal. And so basically what it is if you look collectively between the United States and Canada, we have roughly right around 400,000 head of buffalo, maybe it'll give or take a few, 10,000, I guess. And so really what the big push is if we're going to grow this industry, we got to grow the herd. And so it's both a push for private ranchers. It's a push in conjunction with the state parks. It's a push in conjunction with tribal herds. It's a holistic approach to our industry with all stakeholders, hopefully on board, that are going to move forward trying to grow the herd to 1 million by 2027. It's an ambitious goal. There's definitely pros and cons to it. I've heard both sides of the argument to it. I think it just puts something out there into the future that we're saying, hey, we're working towards something and we're going to try to collectively do that together. And I think what's interesting is it's kind of that herd mentality. Like, we don't need anybody straggling off to the side. Like, we want everybody together pushing forward. And I think it could be really successful. And whether we hit 1 million by bison in 10 years or not. I think just the idea of striving to push our industry to the next level is really a big part of it.
We're speaking with Kevin Lear, Executive Director of the North Dakota Buffalo Association and co-owner operator of Heartland Bison Ranch. Kevin, what brought you into the bison industry?
Well, that's kind of a long story with my family. My dad's originally from the area and had moved away right after high school because there wasn't a lot of opportunity in agriculture. And, you know, living away for a little over 18 years and deciding, hey, this isn't a place to raise a family anymore in, you know, Nevada, we decided as a family that we were going to move back. And the one thing at that time, which was, you know, the mid-90s, one thing that was looking really promising in the ag industry was bison. And so when we came back, we got our first plot of land. It was 80 acres, and we fenced that up. And, you know, in 1997, the spring of 97, we had our first 10 bison calves born, and the market was great, and people were loving it, and it was the hot thing, and we were right in on it, and that's where we got. And I've never raised anything other than bison. You know, I was 8 years old when we moved back to North Dakota. I always wanted to be a cowboy. I always wanted to, you know, wrestle steers, and my parents never let me be a bull rider, so I was all for it, and I just fell in love with the idea of being able to raise something that I really, really enjoyed being around. And I kind of remember I kind of had like maybe an epiphany when I was 12 out feeding in the wintertime, and I just sat there and looked at our herd and thought, geez, I would love to do this. And so that got my wheels in motion, and I bought my first bison when I was 13, expanded my herd, my own little herd within our herd when I was 16, and that paid for my college. And then I got back here, and we went to work on how are we going to be able to grow our operation so that I can become a viable part of it. And that's what we've been working towards. And, you know, it's all stakeholders on board. You know, my wife and kids are all for it. My mom, my dad, my brothers and sisters are supportive of it. So it's something that's become a family endeavor. Our family kind of has a identity tied to bison. I mean, people know in our community, like, oh, yeah, you guys raise bison, you know. And it's something that I have a passion for. And it's been so much fun being in the industry, especially now as I've gotten older, to really meet those people who are kind of the movers and shakers. It's such a small industry that you have the ability to meet those people and, you know, to even call them friends. And I think there's a lot of value to that. But it's also really interesting because I've been able to see a full cycle of how this industry has worked from the worst of times to now we're seeing some of the best times ever in our industry, and hopefully being able to be a part of that next wave of ranchers that continue to propel it into the future. So it's I think a lot of it deals with just the love of the animal.
Now, bison come from the bovine family. How different is it raising a bison from standard cattle?
Yeah. So this is a big thing, and when we look at this kind of, you know, compare and contrast between the two, I like to talk about what's the bison advantage. You know, if I have a guy that I sit down with and say, hey, you know, what do you like about raising cattle? What do you not like about raising cattle? And a lot of times, like, I'll talk to guys and they'll be like, well, I really hate having to calve them out. And partially that deals with, you know, are you working with nature or against nature? And that's a whole nother topic we could get on. But bison, you know, are most operations are working with nature, their natural birth cycle. And that's a big one is, you know, bison, they calve on their own. Like, I think, you know, we've been raising bison for 22 years, and I can tell you, honestly, we've lost one animal, one cow, to a calving problem in 22 years. We've never done a C-section, you know, any of those kind of things are just not going to happen because she's either going to calve on her own or she's probably not going to calve. And that's just the way nature intended it. And so we don't have that problem. Our herd gets kicked out into what we call our calving pastures. I mean, depending on what location we're at, it's probably between 100 or 200 acres. And it's literally every 3 days we go out, we take a look. Hey, we got more calves on the ground. If we're glassing them with a spotting scope, you know, or we're flying our drone overhead. That's the new way that we're checking herds, which is pretty cool. That's pretty simple. So we're not there bedding down. And really, we almost have to take that into perspective every year, like how lucky we are that we get to raise an animal that's so self-sufficient that way. On the flip side of it, when we talk about grazing, you know, bison, we can graze our bison all the way into December if the weather allows us. You know, we basically got to get to about 2 feet of snow, fresh snow, or it has to get crusted over before the bison will really stop actively grazing. So that's really cool. On one of our herds, I mean, we literally go out every week, once a week, we kick out the hay to them. they don't have fresh water for the whole winter. All they're eating is snow. And not every ranch is the same, but that's what works for us, and we want to keep bison as natural as possible. Their feeding regimen's a little bit different. You know, they actually go into what we consider like a semi-hibernation. Their metabolism slow down to where they're eating, you know, maybe a third less than a beef cow. So they're more economical on inputs. We're not as touchy on minerals. Obviously, we do take that into account, but, you know, things like minerals or feed supplementation or, you know, making sure your protein counts are right. Those are all things that we look at, but we don't have to be quite as stringent on it as we would with beef cattle. Inputs in terms of vaccinations and stuff. I mean, our vaccination regimen is one shot, and now that is a wormer to kick out any rangeworms they've gotten over the summer grazing period. So we really try to keep it basic. And if we do that, what we found on our operation is letting bison do what they do best means that they're going to do what's best for themselves, and that in turn is going to be the best thing for us. So it's less labor intensive, and other than, you know, putting in the fences and stuff, that are a little bit upfront labor costs, but those are some of the big differences, I would say.
What about the behavior of the animal? Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of a difference between a bison and cattle.
Yeah, I mean, they're still absolutely the wild strain in them, you know. You got to respect them, and they'll respect you. So the big changes you're going to see when you're doing that is when you're working them in high-pressure areas. And then that just comes down to really, really watching what they're doing and reading the body language of the animal. I'm a firm believer that you can watch the body language of an animal and determine whether or not, you know, that animal is ready to work for you or not, or if, you know, they're going to cooperate or they're not. I mean, I grew up, my mom's a horse person, my sister's horse crazy, and we have a lot of horse people in our family, and they'll say the same thing about horses. I think bison are very similar in that aspect where you can see it. You know, when we get them in high pressure areas, you're not going to hear a lot of hooting and hollering. You're not going to hear a lot of people, you know, talking loud. It's a lot of quiet talking, and it's a lot of just hearing the gates moving and trying to urge them into certain areas and working with the flow of how they naturally would come through a working facility. I mean, I can tell you right now, we've rebuilt our working facility like 7 times because every time you build it, you find something new, like, hey, this works a little bit better. This works a little bit better. It's a little bit safer, you know, for the animal. It's a little bit safer for us. And those are all things that we're continually learning about how to work with the animal. But I think, you know, that's going to be your big difference there too, is when you're working with them in a high pressure area, because they're fight or flight. Like, they're either going to back up and they're going to come at you, or they're going to find a place to get the heck out of there. And if you can minimize that stress of that situation on them, they usually can do pretty well.
Now, looking at consumer trends, there's certainly a few things that come to mind. Americans love meat, but they also want to be healthy, and more people want to know where their food comes from. How do these factors play into raising America's original red meat?
Yeah, well, one of the things is, if you talk about it from an industry standards, and I think that's always an important place to start with bison. For the most part, and this has changed a lot over like the last 5 years, when you engage in a conversation with somebody, a lot of times you'll get like, oh, bison, yeah, I've had a bison burger before, or bison, yeah, that's pretty healthy for you, right? Like, there's always this, there's already kind of like this idea planted in their head of what bison meat is. But what I think is really important is to talk about, from an industry standard working down to the ranches, what's acceptable and what's not. So it's, you know, we have federal regulation that don't allow growth hormones within, you know, our vaccination regimens or anything like that. So we're not using artificial growth hormones. If you're looking at antibiotics, it's an industry standard that only animals that are sick are going to get an antibiotic regimen for a vaccination. And then the ranchers are documenting that. So those animals aren't getting shot with an antibiotic and being killed the next day. I mean, that has to pass through their system before they're allowed to be killed and processed. So you have ranchers that are putting a lot of responsibility on their reputations, on their relationships with processors, because they're signing those legal affidavits saying, this is what we agree to. Those are important, because then that gives ranchers, you know, full faith to be able to look at a consumer and say, I can tell you right now, this animal has never had a growth hormone, and this animal has never had an antibiotic. Or it's had an antibiotic, but it was when it was 9 months old because it had pink eye. And now this animal is processed at 22 months. You know, those are really good things to be able to stand on in terms of the integrity of the product. And so when you take that, and then you put on top of it that it's the healthiest red meat basically on the planet that you can eat, it tastes really good, and that there's a whole story that goes behind it on how this animal was basically brought back from almost near extinction, that family farms are finding a profitable agricultural venture to raise this animal, and really it's that idea of capitalism that's bringing it back. I think all of that packaged together, it creates a product that's hard to beat. And I think that's what we're seeing with consumers, is that they want that product that's good for them. It's good for the environment. And yeah, it might be a little heavy on the pocketbook, but if they're substituting that and they're just choosing the, I mean, that's one of the trends we're seeing, is they're choosing to eat less red meat and they're substituting that red meat with a higher quality red meat. And we're just a niche, you know? I mean, that's one of the things, like, I don't think we're in competition with the beef market personally, because if you look at the beef market, they'll process 100,000 head a day. And we're processing 56,000 a year under USDA federal inspection. So we're just a tiny little fraction of the red meat market. But what our product is giving its consumer is pretty hard to beat.
What advice would you give to those listening that might be interested in breaking into this industry?
Talk to somebody who's in it. That's a big thing that we learned right away. When our family got in, we got in touch with ranchers who were in our local area. In your local area, you might have to travel 100 miles to find a bison ranch. But the very best place to start would be a local or regional association. You know, as somebody who's an executive director of the North Dakota Association, I'm very pro-association because of the networks over, you know, three decades that these associations have established. Most of the associations will have like what they call a mentoring program, or they'll at least have a list of producers that they can put you in touch with who are more than willing to help out answering questions. And that's really the best place to start, in my opinion, is get onto an operation if you can and just talk to somebody, see what they have there, talk to them about the animals, talk to them about, you know, what it's going to take for capital in terms of fencing and that kind of stuff. And then you really got to start putting pen to paper and figuring out, you know, brass tacks, what's this going to look like financially? And that is something that's a very serious topic for us, even at the national level, is we're constantly looking at how do we get the financing lined up so that people who want to get into this can figure out how to get the capital to invest it and start moving forward. And so I know on the North Dakota side, that's one of our big initiatives in the next year, is to start working with the banks to make sure that our bankers understand the value that this industry is providing for people who are producing in it. Because, and rightfully so, there's some of our bankers in North Dakota got burned pretty hard when things went south in the late 90s. And so they were gun shy when it's coming back. But there is concrete evidence now in this industry over the last 7 years of sustainable growth. And numbers don't lie. I mean, when you put that down in front of somebody and say, this is what our industry is doing, this is where we're projecting to go, this is what the commercial marketers are saying. I mean, we have that data from the national level all the way down to your local levels to be able to give that to somebody and say, look at what this is doing, you know? And then on top of that, you say, and we're striving to hit a million animals by 2027. So the market's looking pretty good. We're projecting, you know, we're pretty bullish on bison.
Now, it seems like every bison rancher or farmer you come into contact has very similar characteristics. There's definitely a twinkle in their eye anytime they talk about bison. It's clear that there is a love for this animal. Mm-hmm. Could you just maybe talk a little bit about how the entire industry just loves this animal and product so much?
Yeah, well, I think it has to do a little bit with the mystique of the animal. I mean, it's hard not to feel something when you know, either on your own place or a national park or something, or you're even watching a documentary by the Discovery Channel, when you see one of those big bison herd bulls strolling down the road of Yellowstone, or you drive out to your herd and that big guy comes walking up to your truck, and you just look at that and go, man, this is an unbelievable creature. I mean, this, the sheer biology of the animal is impressive. And then you throw on top of that, I don't know, I mean, just trying to do it the way it was intended to do. And then the type of people that you get to come in contact with, all of that is really great. But I think, you know, one of the things that you're going to see, and you're absolutely right, like most of the people you're ever going to talk to about bison that are in the industry love it. And I think that's a quality that's brought the industry through what it's been through. If people didn't love raising the animal, they would have gotten out of it, you know. And so you have some of these really, you know, pioneers that have kept this industry going. And it's because of that love of bison and the animal that's gotten us to where we are today. And I think it's that same appreciation and love of the animal that's going to take us to the next level too.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much for joining us and talking all things bison.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That's a wrap for this edition of Rural Perspectives Podcast, which is a production of Ag Country Farm Credit Services. To find out more about us, please visit www.agcountry.com.